Hello and welcome to the TV Movie Rewind Podcast with Matt and Todd.
Hi, everyone.
This week we are discussing the 1966 Western adventure film, The Professionals. That's right. The least professional podcast out there will be discussing a movie called The Professionals.
Yes, we'll be their work.
We'll be upholding our legacy as rogue film historians with this episode.
That's right.
This movie is, well, it's got an all-star cast. If you want to see a bunch of badasses doing a bunch of badass things, The Professionals is the movie for you. And this is, it's a Western, but it's more of a commando style movie. It has a lot more in common with like movies like, kind of like Where Eagles Dare or The Guns of Navarone, where it's a crack team of specialists out to accomplish a mission.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose this is as close. Well, actually, it's probably not true. It's not like I know that, you know, movies from the 60s that well, but this would be, you know, like The Expendables for 1966, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, with the cast like Lee Marvin, Burt Lancaster, Woody Strode, and Robert Ryan as our heroic leads, and you still got, you know, Jack Palance as the villain.
As you've never seen him before.
Sort of. Ralph Bellamy, you know, has a small role.
Yep.
Most people will recognize Ralph Bellamy, I think, from Trading Spaces.
Sure.
Where he's one of the brothers that kick off the whole thing there. Yep. Not Trading Spaces, Trading Places.
Trading Places, jeez. Yeah. I know what you meant. With Hume Crone, and he's the other investor. Hume Crone, right?
No, is
the
Don Amici.
Don Amici, yes, not Hume Crone. You're right. Sorry. Yes. Don Amici, of course, yeah.
Yeah, this movie is it's definitely action oriented.
Now, I didn't know, although I mean later seeing, you know, Jack Palance in the movie later on, I'm like, okay, this does seem familiar to me. But I'm not honestly sure. Like, I didn't know much about this movie when you brought it up as our second choice, because our first choice wasn't available at the time, but you know, we'll get to that maybe next week. When you brought it up, I was surprised. I'm like, I believe you've mentioned this movie before, you know, in terms of like, you know, referencing to the Magnificent Seven game or some of the actors, like the name did sound vaguely familiar, but you don't bring this one up much. I mean, you bring up, you know, Westerns, and we've certainly talked enough Westerns because you're such a huge fan of them, but I don't remember this one popping up.
This is another one that I've owned on VHS and got on DVD as soon as it was available.
So you've known you've seen it for a while then. I mean, you've known about this for a long time.
Oh yeah, I go back at least 20 plus years with The Professionals.
Wow, this is the first. I'm not certain this is the first time I've seen it. It's probably something I did watch with you once on some Saturday. Because again, the images of Jack Palance in particular looked familiar, but you know, it's like many of these movies, I've probably long since forgotten it, but unlike many of these movies, we're usually referenced every so often. Like, I just don't remember seeing this one referenced much. It's obviously not one of the earliest Westerns you've seen, but like in terms of, like rankings, like, is this one you watch a lot? Is this one you pull out a lot? Or?
Yeah, I watch this one at least probably, I would say, once a year.
Oh, right on. Okay.
You know, I mentioned as we were watching it, we don't watch enough Burt Lancaster.
No.
You know, like Burt brought up specifically Vera Cruz or Gunfight at the OK Corral.
Although we did watch Vera Cruz recently, I believe.
I know I did. I don't remember if I was watching it with you or not.
I swear we did, but I also could be forgetting. I could also could be remembering a slightly different movie.
Yeah.
Is that one of the ones that's... like Rio Bravo is basically the same as? Is it Rio Bravo?
No. This is Burt Lancaster and Gary Cooper. They head down to join in the Mexican Revolution to be hired. They're hiring themselves out as mercenaries to during the Mexican Revolution.
So it's almost like the prequel to this.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of, because, yeah, they talk about how We'll get to it, but yeah, two of these characters fought during the Mexican Revolution. This movie takes place, I believe, it's 1919.
Yeah, it's definitely somewhere in the late It's definitely somewhere in the late 19 teens, at least 1917 or later. Yeah,
they definitely point out that it is after the First World War.
Right.
And the movie starts out right off introducing our heroes, you know, our team, and kind of showing us what their specialty is.
Yes.
The first person we're introduced to is Lee Marvin playing Rico. He is a former, like we said, he was a mercenary during the Mexican Revolution. He's a master strategist. He knows automatic weapons. He's actually demonstrating a machine gun to the United States military in the opening, showing, you know, how to fire it properly. And he's going to be the leader of our band of heroes.
He's our Hannibal Smith.
Yes. Yes. There are some similarities to the 18 there. Next, we are introduced to Robert Ryan, and he is going to play he's a wrangler, probably, you know, a trail boss. He knows horses. He knows how to train horses. He knows how to pack horses.
He's someone you would want on an expedition. Yes. He may not be a fighter. You know, he's certainly not like a bloodthirsty soldier of fortune type, but he's definitely someone you would want on a long trip with some livestock if you're not familiar, you know.
Well, the first thing we meet him, he rides it to his ranch, and he sees one of his Bronco Busters mistreating a horse.
Yes.
And he immediately grabs the guy off the horse and starts punching him. And the guy's like, well, you wanted him broke, didn't you? And he says, yeah, I wanted him broke, but I didn't want to ruin him. Now, punches him out again. Go draw your pay. You're fired.
Right. He's very serious about the treatment of his animals.
And I should point out at the end of each of these four scenes, well, these first three scenes, we're introduced to a man named Ortega, who is delivering a message to each of them. Like, you know, here's the message, read this.
Right.
Then we're introduced to Woody Strode, who is probably the most badass of all of them. The quiet, you know, he doesn't have much to say, but we know he's a master tracker. He's great with the bow and arrow. He's great with the rope. And he's obviously bringing in a wanted fugitive. So he works as either a marshal or a bounty hunter.
Right.
The implication, I would say, is bounty hunter.
That's the vibe I got, was that, yeah, he's a bounty hunter, tracker.
And he's bringing in a guy to a sheriff. And just as he's turning him in, you know, the guy tries to attack him, but Woody knocks him down immediately. And the sheriff who's taking the guy into custody also says, you ever heard of a G.W. Grant? Woody's like, no. Well, he's looking for you. And he hands, you know, Woody Strode a telegram. Lastly, we're introduced to Burt Lancaster, who is in the middle of having relations with what we will soon find out is another man's wife.
Right.
Because all of a sudden there's a banging at the door. And the woman's like, here, get your pants on. Hurry, get out of here, quick. And the guy, you know, kicks down the door. And he's running through the streets. He jumps out the window and is running through the streets in his underwear to get away. Now we see all the first three, Lee Marvin, Woody Strode, and Robert Ryan all meeting at a train platform. They've all got their messages, and this is obviously where they're meant to meet. And Ralph Bellamy comes out as G.W. Grant, and he's obviously a rich, whether it's cattle or a train tycoon, he's a rich man.
Right, yeah, he's some sort of, yeah.
He's the one that has hired them all out, and while he's introducing himself to the three men, thanking them for arriving, there's a banker with, you know, armed guards, and they have a box, and they have, you know, $10,000 in gold coins for that they've arranged for, you know, Mr. Grant to pick up and take with them. And, you know, he's almost like this $10,000 is kind of even insignificant to him, which shows you how rich he is, because he's like, you know, just, you know, you should sign for it and you really should count it, Mr. Grant. But Mr. Grant's like, didn't you count it? Like, well, yes. Like, all right, whatever.
Right.
He's obviously in a hurry to get going.
Right.
And now we are going to learn the whole plot of this movie. G.W. Grant is married to a beautiful Mexican woman played by Claudia Cardinale. And she has been kidnapped a few days ago, taken down into Mexico across the border. And a Mexican revolutionary, Jesus Raza, played by Jack Palance, is the guy who has kidnapped her and demanding a $10,000 ransom in gold. And this is where we find out that Lee Marvin actually fought alongside Raza during the Mexican Revolution. So when J.W. Grant asks, like, what do you know about this guy? He goes, I know a lot about him. I respect him as a soldier. And he says, well, your respected soldier kidnapped my wife. And, you know, we find out he's got an army of revolutionaries behind him. And G.W. Grant is saying, like, you know, it would take the army, you know, a whole battalion to fight their way down there and get her out. But a group of highly skilled individuals like he has assembled here could go down there, maybe kind of even sneak in and get her out and bring her back to me. And Lee Marvin's like, well, you know what? You're probably better off paying the ransom. He's like, I got the ransom right here, ready to go, ready for you to take it down there.
Right. But get her back. Yeah.
Well, but he also says, you know, and I know that paying the ransom is no guarantee that Raz is going to give her back to me. You know, he'll take the money and he'll still keep my wife.
Right. He's a revolutionary and presumed bandit. So, yeah, he's in it for the money anyway, or he's looking for money anyway. So why would he?
Right.
Yeah.
This is to help. He wants the money to help fund the revolution.
Right.
And he also, you know, he introduces the three men to each other, explaining all their, you know, skills. And during that, Lee Marvin says, all right, but we need one more guy. We need, if we're going to get your wife out, we need somebody who is a master of explosives. And he says, well, do you have anybody in mind? And he mentions, you know, Burt Lancaster, that he also fought alongside Raza. So he knows the territory as well. He knows Raza as well. And, you know, if you have him on the team, then it's a go. And he says, well, if you want him, you got him. Let's see if we can locate him. And that's when Lee Marvin pulls a little note. I was like, oh, he's not far from here. He's being held in a jail. And, you know, $500 will get him out. And he's like, in jail? He's like, yeah, but you know what? I trust him. And that, so G.W. Grant says, well, if you trust him, then I trust him. And they go and bail him out of the jail. And that's where Lee Marvin gives him the proposal, like, you know, this is what's going to be your payment, because they're all getting paid. The offer from Grant is $1,000 right then and there, and $9,000 to each man when they bring his wife back. So at first, you know, even Burt Lancaster, who's kind of the would you say he's the hero, the lead of this movie? Because I would.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the strongest conscience of them, you could say. Yeah. He gets to be the moral compass of the group as much as anyone, I would say so.
Yes. And when he finds out, like, you know, wait, we're going back to Mexico. You want us to go back to Mexico after all, you know, after all we went through in the blood and gore and the revolution, you want us to go back? And he's like, well, you know, it's worth $10,000. And, you know, there's been a woman kidnapped by, you know, Raza. And again, he pauses, like, Raza? Our Raza, the guy we fought with? Yep. But it becomes clear that, you know, for the money and for the, you know, rescuing kidnapped women, they have no problem fighting and possibly killing a former comrade of theirs.
Well, I mean, I mean, they don't go out and say it, but I imagine part of the justification is like, well, he must have turned worse, you know, than we thought. Like, you know, being a revolutionary and fighting the government is one thing, but now he's like a bandit and thief and kidnapper.
Well, and you also get the idea that both, you know, Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster either lost faith in the revolution,
right,
or decided it wasn't their fight anymore.
Right, or at least, lost faith in Villa. And there's some, there's some historical sentiment to that, which is interesting if you look into it. And, if you do the math of the time frames that they talk about. So it makes, in that context, it sort of make, you can sort of understand where they're coming from. But also, it's 10 grand.
Yes.
And 10 grand also, in 1917-ish, 1917 to 1920 money. So.
There's also mention... during these scenes that Lee Marvin is a widower who was married to a Mexican woman. So we get our, we kind of get the setup, this is like the mission briefing. Grant introduces them to one of his aides, a man named Ortega, and says, he's known my wife since she was a little girl in Mexico. And Ortega's like, yes, I will do anything for the señorita, anything. And when you get down near to where Raza has his base, his hideout set up, there's a man there who's a goat herder who also knows Maria and would do anything for her. And he can help you once you get down there with scouting around. And if you take this necklace and show it to him, he'll know you're a friend and that I sent you. So that's the basic setup. They're given their horses and they head off and their equipment, dynamite, rope, everything they're going to need for their little commando raid on Raza's compound, manned by, like we said, there's a good, I would say, platoon's worth of revolutionaries fighting alongside Raza at this hacienda he's got set up.
Oh yeah, no, they're considerably outnumbered. Yeah, I guess I don't know what the exact term would be, but he's got several. He's well defended.
Yes, and I should also point out that this movie has a lot of Spanish dialogue that is not subtitled.
Unless you have the subtitles they actually do translate it if you have the subtitles on.
Well, but here's the thing. There's a reason they didn't do subtitles. Because they actually expect, most of the people watching this movie in 1966 probably won't speak Spanish. Because there's a lot of clues that come up if you know what they're saying in Spanish.
Right.
Especially when they meet the first group.
Right.
So, knowing Spanish, and I don't know a lot of Spanish, but I know enough to get by watching this movie to what some of the characters are saying. And like I said, there's a lot of clues to, I'll say it right now, there's a twist in the plot to this movie.
To me, the biggest clue was already given in the setup. But, if we want to uncover this in real time, I won't say anything now.
Well, I just want to say right now.
That's if you watch a lot of Westerns, you should have seen where this was going from the start.
But also... if you want to see this movie fresh, stop listening that the now and seek it out and watch it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there will be a major spoiler coming out.
Right.
Again, anybody, if you listen to this podcast, we spoil.
Yeah, we're going to spoil it. It's not necessarily one that changes the film either way, but it's better to not know the first time around. Like any spoiler, it's just better to not know.
There's enough action to carry through this movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's not centrally important. I mean, this is about the interplay. I love a good ensemble cast. You don't get that too much anymore. And this is a good example of one. Very well. I mean, a lot of Westerns are, and this was, I assume this was a Blu-ray because it looks gorgeous. But I always appreciate the use of, I always appreciate how older films especially were shot, especially Westerns. They really know how to get that scenery in there. The widescreen aspect ratio works wonderfully. You really get a sense of the surroundings. And this movie is no exception. It looks gorgeous.
Well, this movie did get an Academy Award nomination for Best Cinematography.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. I'm glad it did because it's beautiful.
Yeah. Three nominations, actually. One for, two for, one for director Richard Brooks and one for Best Adapted Screenplay, which was also done by Richard Brooks. So.
Oh, so this was a book.
Yes, A Mule for the Marquesa by Frank O'Rourke. I've never read it, so I don't know how faithful it is.
Okay. But yeah, like I love one of the things that I always appreciate, and it seems in particular in Westerns and especially older war movies, is that they don't try to like cram the screen, like, slamming it into the actors' faces. And, the idea of like the massive jump cuts weren't all there or overproduction. It's just like the scenes just kind of speak for themselves, and you really get to appreciate like. I mean, this must have been especially few, and I remember you telling me about it. Because for years you would see this in full screen, like it was that's just what TV was at the time, and obviously we weren't alive in the '60s, so it's not like we saw it in the theater. So finally seeing these in widescreen must have been a revelation, to some extent, almost like seeing them for the first time.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if my VHS copy was widescreen or not. It may not have been.
Right, like that was pretty uncommon, like letterboxing. On V, like letterboxing didn't come around until pretty late into VHS. So yeah, very possibly not. Like pan and scan is what you got, and you didn't realize until you saw them in widescreen just how much of a scene you were missing, or why certain scenes like seemed to be framed weird, because you just kind of forgot that these used to be on a wider screen. Sometimes, very wide, especially back in those days when they were like experimenting with some of the extremely wide, ratios and panoramic cameras, things like that.
Yeah. Well, our four heroes start heading towards their destination. And again, a lot of this movie is the acting, especially the camaraderie between Lee Marvin's and Burt Lancaster's character.
Yeah.
You really get the sense that these are two old buddies, comrades in arms, reunited after several years.
Yes.
And it's a testament to their acting because apparently, Burt Lancaster had some problems with Lee Marvin. Most notably, it's known that Lee Marvin was a drinker. And I guess sometimes he would show up a little inebriated. And Burt Lancaster was known to be a very, talk about professionals, he was a professional actor. So he really did not appreciate it if Lee Marvin wasn't ready for a scene. And he expressed it to the director on certain occasions once, and I wish I could remember where I read this so I could use it as give a reference. But he told the director that if Lee Marvin didn't stop drinking and show up for his scenes ready to go, he was going to throw him off the mountain that they were filming on.
I mean, I love Lee Marvin. I love his stuff. Anyway, but it's like, yeah, I can only imagine having to like reshoot stuff in that heat. Like, you can feel how hot this movie is.
Yes.
Like, you can only take so much.
Yes. And again, if there was any hostility behind the
You
scenes,
don't
you don't
see it.
get any
No.
hint of that on screen.
No. And.
Not a single hint.
And what I appreciate about this movie, maybe it wasn't as much of a trope then as it seems to be now, but the group gets along. There's no
Yes.
infighting to deal with and like pad the movie out with. They just get along. They're professionals.
And right away, you get the sense of how all of them are going to handle the situation because Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster are both like, this is old hat for us,
Right.
whatever. Woody Strode is obviously not is used to doing this by himself, tracking people across the desert, doing whatever.
Right, which is why you don't get a lot out of him, at least in terms of like any dialogue or anything like that. It's just like that's you get the sense of his role, like he's used to being alone, so alone is what he is.
Yes, and Robert Ryan is clearly not a man of action.
Yes.
Somebody who's capable of handling himself, but he's got like a lot of questions. He's obviously not used to being in a dangerous situation when it comes to gunfights.
He's a cattle rancher, which has its own danger and adventure, but not an adventurist or mercenary like Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster.
He's no soldier.
Right. He's not looking for trouble. Like you said, he can handle himself, but because he has to. I mean, he's a rancher. It's not an easy job, especially then. But he's not in it to fight. He's just
And
trying to be a rancher.
he's not a desert survivalist like the
Right.
other three either.
Right.
So as they're going along, Woody Strode picks up that there's a trail of at least 10 men mounted that have been following them and circling around. And they've actually crossed these people's trail a couple of times. And reading the tracks now, he goes, they ain't far away. So Lee Marvin realizes where they are right now is actually a perfect place for them to set up an ambush for these guys that are following them if they're hostile. So Woody Strode rides out, you know, to try to get a little bit of heads up on when they're coming. And Lee Marvin, you know, gives Robert Ryan, who again is, you know, inexperienced in this stuff, like a little kind of rundown. It's like, okay, if they're friendly, they're going to come at a single file leader up front. If they're hostile, they'll probably come at us all at once. Nobody out front.
Fan out. Yeah.
No palaver. You know, if they're friendly, they're probably going to put a lot of palaver. They'll just ride on past us. Now, if the leader takes off his hat and puts it over his gun hand, you let go quick. Woody Strode rides up. He says, they're right behind me. They're going to be here soon. So Lee Marvin shows Woody Strode, you know, get up on that rock up there. He points, you know, Robert Ryan, you get up over there. And me and Burt Lancaster are going to be the ones that kind of draw them in. And Lancaster says, you know, should we do it like we did back then? Like, yep, we'll do it. They get their guns ready and they just start, you know, sauntering along, all friendly, leading their horses. When through the canyon ride, you know, 10 mounted men. And Burt Lancaster points out that they're all armed with bolt action rifles. And the leader of the Mexican party says, hey, gringos, what brings you guys out here? And like, oh, you know, we're just, you know, looking for a place to camp. You know, we're not looking for any trouble. You know, the Mexican says like, oh, what do you got in those sacks, boss? Gold? And Burt Lancaster's like, you got more gold in your teeth. And, you know, they all laugh. And, you know, the Mexican saying, you know, you guys should be careful. There's a lot of dangerous bandits out here. And they're all like, oh, playing the innocent. Right. Like, oh, really?
Jeez. Like, oh, well,
we should be careful right. then, shouldn't we? And that's when the Mexican makes his move. He puts, just as Lee Marvin said, he puts his hat over his gun hand. And we get our first gunfight action sequence.
Was this the part, forgive me, because I obviously don't remember right, but was this the do I have to kill you to show you that I like you part, or is that later?
Nope.
Is that the later
That's
one?
That's coming up a little bit later.
Okay, yeah.
It's quick. It's violent. They gun down all 10 of their enemies. And again, we're going to get a look at Robert Ryan's character, because as one of the horses starts running, one of the bad guy's horses starts running away. He goes to shoot it, but finds out his gun's empty. And he turns to Robert Ryan and says, shoot the horse. And Robert Ryan refuses.
Right.
And he's like, you shoot the horse. And he grabs Robert Ryan's gun and goes to shoot at the horse. They start now want to dig graves for, they're going to bury the guys they've killed because they don't want anybody to know that they were here. So they're all digging to bury them. And, Robert Ryan says, well, what about the rest of their horses? Are we going to shoot them too? And Lee Marvin says, well, we're going to have to because we can't spare the food or the water. And Robert Ryan's like, well, we don't have to shoot them. We can turn them loose. And Burt Lancaster says, no, we turn them loose. They're going to ride back to wherever their home base is. And the people are going to say, geez, who are the people? Where do the riders go? You know, we can't afford that. They'll go south. And Robert Ryan insists, no, they'll go north to where the river is for water. And Lee Marvin decides, all right, you know what, turn them loose.
Like for
because
for me personally, obviously I'm siding with Robert Ryan here, but it's really hard not to hear their point that they'll just go right back to the bandit camp and inadvertently alert the you know the very people they're trying to avoid. It's a tough call. Yes. I'm not sure. I mean, I suppose I would have just let the horses go and hope for the best too, but I don't know. I'm not in 1917 or a hardened gunslinger either.
Well, but the other thing is Robert Ryan is supposed to know horses.
Right. Right. Right.
So, and it does kind of make sense, you know, they're in the desert.
Right, they're animals. Horses, they would go to where the water is. Yeah.
They're going to go to where the water was, which is the opposite direction, and Lee Marvin either agrees or he just wants to avoid the fight and get these guys buried and keep moving.
I feel like it's the latter. Yeah.
And, you know, he says, all right, we'll let him go. We'll be skipping over a lot of, you know, dialogue, because again, the movie is really loaded with you know, great dialogue and scenes between these actors. They continue down, and at this point, because they're in familiar territory, Burt Lancaster rides off ahead to scout. And he, you know, he's looking around, you know, he finds a little, the ruins of what might have been an old house or whatever, and he uses his shovel to carve a cross into one of the walls before riding on even further. Short time later, Lee Marvin, Robert Ryan, and Woody Strode ride up to where he was, and, you know, survey the situation. And Robert Ryan sees the cross carved into the wall and says, "Gee, I wonder how long that's been there." And Lee Marvin says, "Not long. Lancaster put it there. It's a signal between us. A right side up cross means everything's okay. An upside down cross means danger." And Robert Ryan's like, "But anybody could have put that there." Yep. And Lee Marvin says, "Well, that's the point."
Right.
Again, we see Burt Lancaster scouting out ahead, and he's at a cemetery, you know, a lot of wooden crosses around, and he hears a horse nearby. So immediately he pulls up one of the crosses, puts it upside down, and rides off to investigate, and he is surrounded and captured by three bandits.
Okay, here we go. This is the part, yeah.
They strip him. They hang him upside down. He's hanging upside down. They're going through his stuff, and they're kind of, you know, all laughing. You know, oh, we got this gringo, and he's, you know, we got his, you know, his stuff. And one of them's interrogating, like, "So what are you doing here?" And Burt Lancaster, who is cool as a cucumber in this situation, is saying, like, "I tell you, but you'll laugh at me." And the Mexican guy responds, "No, it's not proper to laugh at a man who's about to die. Tell me, why are you down here?" And he goes, "Well, because I love your tequila and I love your women." And the guy bursts out laughing. And he's like, Burt Lancaster's like, "I see, I told you you'd laugh at me."
And you know what? I think that's a legit answer. And probably, like, mostly true anyway, right? Like, I guess what I'm saying, you know, not only is he telling the truth, and I just feel like, I don't know, I'm kind of surprised he didn't buy it, because it seems like a pretty legit answer.
He didn't buy it because he knows the truth.
Right.
Because as he points out, like, these 10 horses rode up to us today, but where are the men who ride them? Because unfortunately, we find out Robert Ryan was wrong.
Yeah.
The horses didn't go to the water. They went back to where they normally go.
If you can't trust a horse, man.
So, well, again, you can't trust a horse. These horses were loyal to the people who owned them.
Right. I'm just saying, you know, they could have done him a solid. And, like, it, you know, Lancaster is great in this scene because, again, he's hung literally upside down for I don't know how long.
With the guy waving a machete in his face.
Right, in the Mexico heat. So even, like, from an actor perspective, it's like, bravo, sir. Bravo, because I might have tapped out in about 30 seconds, let alone, like, in scene, it's for a good 5 or more minutes, but who knows how long, like, on set.
Yeah. Well, Lee Marvin, Woody Strode, and Robert Ryan come up upon the cemetery, and as they're looking around, they notice, oh, there's the upside-down cross, there's danger, and they immediately, well, again, we should point out, Woody Strode and Lee Marvin immediately go into action. You know, Woody Strode checking the tracks to see where they ended up, and they pull off. So they find where Burt Lancaster is being held. Woody Strode takes up basically a sniper position with his bow and arrow, and Lee Marvin goes in, you know, with the gun, trying to, you know, convince the guys to, you know, "Oh, you got my friend here. Why don't you let him go?" And, you know, the Mexican guys are all laughing, like, "No, why don't you put down your gun and join us?" And, like, "If I put down my gun, how do I know you'll still be friendly?" And what's your favorite line in the movie?
Do I have to kill you to show you how much I like you? To show you that I like you?
Yeah.
which is great reasoning. And I should mention, unfortunately, I don't know this actor's name because I'm not sure the character's name, but he gets my Whit Bissell Award. I loved this scene so much. He was fantastic.
I wanted to give it to him as well, but like you, there was no way to tell because he's not listed as a named character. He's must be in the credits somewhere.
Right. He's certainly, I imagine he's credited, but I couldn't tell you who he was, but he's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's my favorite.
Fantastic. Yeah. He's so charming.
Yes.
You're almost like I should put down my gun and cooperate. He's right. Like a nice enough guy.
Right.
If he's not waving a machete in your face.
I was kind of hoping he somehow wouldn't get killed, you know.
But, you know, Lee Marvin pulls off the distraction. Woody Strode's able to take out the other two guys with the bow and arrow, and they kill the three bandits and rescue Burt Lancaster and continue on their journey. And at one point, we even get a scene a little further on where, you know, they're kind of camped out during the day, you know, resting a little bit before going any further. And Robert Ryan is just not handling the heat. And I can fully sympathize.
Right. Like, I don't mind the heat, but I mean, this is the Mexican desert, you know?
Yes. He's dizzy. He's you know, kind of like, oh, the heat. I can't believe it. It's relentless. And just before he collapses, Burt Lancaster is able to grab him. He brings him over to Woody Strode, who helps give him some water and a salt tablet. To help him, you know, rest, and, you know.
The salt tablet seems so counterintuitive. I guess it's a thing, yeah, but it seems super counterintuitive to me.
But I guess that it's an electrolyte, and it helps you retain water.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, I mean, I'm not an expert on desert survival, but I guess, you know, taking salt tablet along with the water, like fresh water, is a desert survival technique.
I got you. So, I mean, I should technically say, like, this wasn't filmed in Mexico, but it was filmed in Death Valley, the Valley of Fire State, and the Valley of Fire State Park. So I can't imagine it was, you know, I have to imagine it was pretty damn hot.
So next we get another action sequence not involving our heroes. The heroes witness it, but they don't take part. They're up on a cliff when they see a military train coming through by the, you know, the Mexican military, and it is soon attacked by Raza and his men. And so you get this great battle sequence between the military and Raza's revolutionaries attacking the train and, you know, capturing some machine guns and other equipment, and they capture those they don't kill, they take captive. And after the battle, Raza's walking along the train, you know, talking to his men, congratulating them. And we see that the captives being held near the train. And Raza sees a wanted poster for himself, which he kind of smiles at and pulls down and puts in his pocket. And then he talks to his lieutenant, who's bringing in two captives, saying, like, are these guys Colorados? And the lieutenant answers, yes, they're all Colorados. So right from there, Raza takes his gun and begins executing each and every one of the captives, except for the two leaders who are hung by a pole near the train station. And, you know, our heroes witness this all, and Burt Lancaster, you know, after it's all over and the revolutionaries ride off, he says, justice. And Lee Marvin takes offense to that. He gets angry and storms off. And Burt Lancaster then explains to Woody Strode and Robert Ryan that Lee Marvin was married to, that these guys were Colorados. And they were basically a Gestapo equivalent type of unit. You know, they went to, they worked, they massacred, you know, they were not, help me out here.
Well, basically, he explains that, yeah,
they're stormtroopers.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's basically brutal justice for a brutal, or I should say, brutal reprisal for a brutal justice that, you know, men and citizens who weren't on their side felt during the, sometime earlier during that war.
But again, the Colorados were known for their brutality.
Right.
And he then tells a story about what happened to Lee Marvin's wife. That the Colorados went out to a town where there were suspected revolutionaries, and they captured everybody, and they brought out his wife and said, you know, why do you fight, you know, why do you fight against us? And she said, I fight to save the world from scum like you.
Right.
And they then stripped her naked, tied her to a back, tied her up, and dragged her
through a
behind
cactus
a horse
patch. Yeah.
Through cactus patches until her skin was shredded and she was dead.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes you wonder why Lee Marvin wasn't like, yeah, it is justice.
Yeah, it's like, because the way he storms off does not play out the way that he tells the story. Or at least you don't, like, it doesn't feel like that until he tells the story. It's like, okay, I guess he was just generally disgusted and stormed off or something.
I think he's kind of lost his taste for, you know, he'll fight if he has to, but he's lost his taste for any killing.
Right.
And especially, you know, killing of prisoners, regardless of who they are.
Right. Like, know, the execution just didn't sit. Yeah. Didn't feel like,
you know,
justice.
Are you any better than they are?
Right.
If you're doing the same thing to them, are you any better?
Right. Right. Yeah.
So the revolutionaries leave the train behind. They take off everything. And you know, all the equipment and stuff. And it doesn't really show it, but the heroes take over the train and take the train to a nearby station where the goat keeper they were supposed to meet up with resides with his, you know, his goats. They get there, they show him the necklace that Ortega gave him, and he's like, oh, Mr. Ortega, yeah, you're here to rescue the senorita. Oh, yeah, I know the senorita. You know, I've known her since she was a little girl. She was raised on the milk of my goats, and I would do anything for it, much like Mr. Ortega. So if you're friends and if you're friends of Mr. Ortega and you're here to help the senorita, then yes, I'm going to help you. And so, you know, they ask him some general questions about, you know, how many men does Araza have in his camp? Where in the camp is Mrs. Grant being held? You know, is she there? And, you know, the goat keeper, you know, answers their questions and works along with them. And they still, you know, I'm not sure whether they can trust him or not, but, you know, they stay at the camp, and they later themselves even go. And in fact, yes, they go and investigate the hacienda themselves. That's where they first see the goat keeper delivering the milk and know who he is, and then they go back to his location and have the discussion with him. They worked out a plan that they're going to make it look like, because they're way outnumbered, there's no way the three of them, because the fighting unit is Lancaster, Marvin, and Strode. And they know that the three of them aren't going to be able to shoot their way in, rescue Mrs. Grant, and then shoot their way back out. So Lee Marvin comes up with a plan to make it look like the Mexican army is attacking with artillery. He tells Lancaster, I want you to rig their water tower to look like it's been hit with a French 47. Blow it to hell and gone. And then Lancaster, you know, comes up with the idea of taping dynamite sticks to Woody Strode's arrow so he can launch, you know, dynamite into the camp from his arrows, you know, like there's an artillery barrage coming on.
Right, got a little A-team ingenuity going.
Yes. So they're all making, you know, they're all making the plan so that, and they go back to the goat keeper's camp, and the goat keeper starts asking questions like, so, when do you plan on launching the attack? You know, how many of you are going? You know, should I tell the senorita that you're coming? And Lee Marvin's like, no, don't tell her anything. We don't. She might act differently. We don't want her to know anything. It's like, oh, okay. Don't worry. You can trust me. And just as that's going on, some of the soldiers from Raza show up, and you know they start riding in, and the professionals start ducking for hiding places. You know, they're hiding in the train. They don't hide very well. They just try to get out of the line of sight, and they tell the goalkeeper, "All right, well, this is your chance to show what we can. We can trust you. You know, go out and talk to them. And remember, I speak Spanish, so I'll know if you're trying to sell us out." So the soldiers ride in, and the goatkeeper goes out to talk to them. And, you know, they're clearly asking, you know, if he's seen any gringos, if there's any strangers around. And he's saying no, and some of the soldiers kind of spread out. And they give a half-hearted look. You know, they just kind of peek into the train. And Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster just kind of leaning up against the right. side walls. If these guys had done even...
They're like hiding behind a lamp.
Yeah. You know, what they've got their hands over their eyes.
Yeah, there you go. They're just stepping out of camera frame. It works every time.
Obviously, the soldiers, you know, like, you know, all right, they're not here. And then they basically kick down the poor goat keeper and ride on past him, you know, take off riding. So once they're gone, the professionals head back out and, you know, help the goat keeper up. And the goat keeper's like, well, now do you trust me? And they're kind of like, yeah, all right, you know, whatever. I mean, Robert Ryan's, you know, on his side saying, you know, like, you know, look, he didn't give us up. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they treated him badly. And Burt Lancaster points out that he knew if he gave us up, he'd be the first one we shot.
Right, right. Yeah, it's not exactly. Like, he, you know, it's still, you can still be suspicious, I would say.
Right.
I mean, Robert Ryan's character is, like, inherently trusting, and that's probably a good thing, you know, in this group to have some balance. But no, you're just taking it, yeah, you're just taking it at face value. And, right, he's, you know, I was thinking the same thing. It's probably just as likely that if he does give him up, he gets shot anyway.
So later the goat keeper is saying he's going to go back to the hacienda with some milk. And, you know, again, he just says, so you don't want me to tell the señorita? Can you come? Like, no. And you know, we won't be able to get our, you know, there's still a lot of planning to do. So we won't be able to launch our assault for at least 2 days. You know, it won't be till tomorrow night. Or maybe the day after. And the goalkeeper's like, okay. And he goes off. As soon as he's out of sight, Lee Marvin turns to the others like, okay, we go tonight.
Right. Yep. That's exactly right. I'd have done the same thing. Or at the very least, yeah, you go not. You just told him that you're going because I'm not sure I trust him either. Besides, it's in your best interest not to. It's not like trusting him. Or it's not like not trusting him and finding out that you could have is going to matter much, you know?
Right. So Robert Ryan, who is not a gunfighter, stays behind alone at the camp. He's going to, you know, you see him, you know, working on horseshoes to reshoe the horses. He wants to get the horses ready for what's obviously going to be a hard and fast ride once the guys break out Mrs. Grant. So the other three arrive and they get to the bluffs again above the hacienda. They've confirmed where Mrs. Grant is being held, which building she's being held in. And as again, while they're scouting around, Burt Lancaster notices a female revolutionary amongst the group who is Chiquita, played by Marie Gomez. And Marie Gomez is getting my Whip Pistol Award, which you will find out a little bit more later. Not for what she's doing right now, but
right, yeah, she doesn't really say much.
She was clearly an old paramour of Burt Lancaster because he gets this wistful smile on his face, like Chiquita. And, you know, there's some music playing. There's kind of a celebration going on. There's music playing. Chiquita's dancing a little bit. And he just kind of smiles and laughs and says, ah, Chiquita, she can lick an entire regiment, but she can't dance a lick. Yeah. So they have their plan. It's They're synchronizing their watches for the attack.
Everybody's off. Get better time.
Everybody's a little bit off.
Get your GPS going or whatever, because, like, you know, you gotta get that like network time protocol going, because they're all off by a few minutes. It's a good thing they check that. Can you imagine if they didn't? In a wildly different ending.
Well, the plan is that they're going to blow up the water tower with the huge explosive, like it's been hit by artillery, and Woody Strode is going to launch arrows with dynamite taped to arrows into the compound once that goes off, so that the revolutionaries think they're being attacked by, you know, a large force. Lancaster mentions that, okay, it's going to take me 30 minutes to set the charge. Then this fuse will burn for exactly 30 minutes. So that means fireworks goes off at 5:30, which means that's when Lee Marvin has to grab Maria and get out of there. Woody Strode's going to launch his attack. And I assume it was assumed that Burt Lancaster was also going to offer covering fire from the bluffs. So they all start making their moves. You see Burt Lancaster moving through this, basically an aqueduct, towards the water tower to set his explosives. Woody Strode goes up and takes out a guard that's up in the higher cliffs, where he's going to take his position to launch his arrows. And Lee Marvin sneaks into the compound and sneaks into the room where Maria Grant's being held. And he gets in there and he kind of spies through, like, these beaded curtains that there's, you know, an older woman kind of looking after Maria Grant. She's looking, you know, Maria Grant's looking all a little angry, a little upset. She's sitting alone on a bed, and Lee Marvin just kind of hides in the corner in the shadows waiting for the fireworks to go off. So Lancaster sets his explosives. And instead of heading out, he heads into the building where Lee Marvin is. And Lee Marvin is first is like, "What are you doing here?" It's like, you know, we're gonna do this together, I guess. So they're sitting there watching, and Raza comes in, which looks like this is going to be a bad situation. He kicks out the old woman. He starts taking off his clothes. You're thinking, even Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster are thinking, are we going to have to jump the gun and go in there and rescue her before the explosion goes off? Because Burt Lancaster's looking at his watch, and he's like, it's still a little bit time before it goes off. But that's when we find out that Maria Grant is not being held against her will.
Right. They've
been had. You know, she and Raza are lovers. And as you mentioned, that's exactly what Burt Lancaster says. We've been had.
Yeah.
And he says, let's get out of here.
And that's the right thing to say.
Like, yeah. And Lee Marvin's like, no. And he heads in, clubs Raza over the back of the head. And just as Maria starts to scream for help, the large explosive goes off. And, of course, you know, the soldiers outside are distracted by that.
So do you suppose Lee Marvin is like, look, we're paid to do this, so we're doing it? You figure that's what it is?
Yeah, or he thinks Stockholm Syndrome is set in really fast.
Well, it's just because, like, the other two, they don't count because they're not there, right? And Burt Lancaster, you know, established. I don't remember if he said it. No, he would explain later, actually, when he's talking to Maria. But Burt Lancaster, we find out later, he's kind of like a winsome adventurer himself. So I could sort of see why he's just like, the money is whatever. Even though, you know, it's a lot of money, and I'm sure he wanted it. I could sort of see why he'd be like, oh, well, you know, win some, lose some. I was in it as much for the fun anyway. But, like, I was trying to figure out exactly why Lee Marvin didn't just back out too, and it's like, well, it is 10 grand plus there's two other people expecting it as well. You know, you're kind of making that decision for him. I guess you've gone in for a penny, in for a pound, right?
Well, I think part of it too, just maybe he's thinking, well, she is legally Grant's wife,
right?
We are legally, you know, I don't know, well, they're not legally, but they have, like you said, they're being paid 10 grand each to do this,
right?
So it's obviously, they don't say this at this point, but it's later revealed that, you know, Maria was in on this whole thing. So right. He's like, you know, She's cheating on her husband and in on a scam to ransom, you know, $100,000 from her husband. You know, let's take her back.
That's true.
You know, this we're kind of doing the right thing here. So we another action sequence as, you know, explosions are going off. Woody Strode is launching his arrows into the compound. Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster are escorting Maria Grant out. There's every now and then a soldier will notice them and they have to exchange gunfire with them. They race to Hacienda is obviously near a mine.
Yeah.
Because they jump into these coal cars to escape. Woody Strode meets up with them. Lee Marvin grabs one of the machine guns that was stolen from the train earlier and they make their escape. When they get back to where Robert Ryan is at the goat keeper's pen and where they left the train, we see that Robert Ryan is under guard by Raz's men. They've obviously managed to get their, you know, a squad of them managed to get their ahead. And they're hiding. And when they see the other three show up with Maria Grant, they say to Robert Ryan, call them in and don't say anything more than I told you to say or you get a bullet. So Robert Ryan gets up, you know, he turns, he goes to the door and says, you know, oh, it's all clear. Oh, and you forgot your cross, your upside down cross, which clues them in that there's danger. Robert Ryan dives out the door, but he still takes a bullet from one of the revolutionaries. Before a firefight erupts, Burt Lancaster grabs Maria Grant, puts a gun to her head,
yep,
saying, all right, back off or I'll kill her. So it's like, okay, she wasn't being kidnapped and held hostage before, but she certainly is now.
Right. Right, exactly. Now, technically, you're the kidnappers. Well, factually, I guess you're the kidnappers.
So, of course, all the soldiers back off. They tell them to get off the train, and the professionals get on the train, get it going, and make their escape via train. But again, just as they're out of sight, the soldiers mount up and start chasing after the train, and now the rest of the movie is basically an extended chase sequence. We see the bandits, oh, I shouldn't say bandits, the revolutionaries, chasing after the train. Right. They finally get caught up to it. They shut it down, only to realize that the professionals have left the train earlier. And we see them, you know, riding away on horseback. This is where we get a scene where they're resting up and, you know, Burt Lancaster's trying to work on Robert Ryan's wound. And they're also question, you know, Burt Lancaster's trying to clear the air. It's like, okay, what are we doing here? You know, Lee Marvin, she doesn't want to be with us. And, you know, Maria states, no, you know, when he catches you, he's going to kill you. So why don't you let me go? And maybe I can convince, you know, Jesus to let you all live. And Marvin's like, nope, we made a contract. You're coming with us. You're married to, you know, Grant, we're bringing you back to your husband. She's like, I never loved him. I only married him because my father insisted I marry him because my father thought I would have a better life, but I don't have a better life. And G.W. Grant is one of those, you know, businessmen that makes money off the misery of my country.
And that's where I was going with that. Like, basically at the beginning of the movie, when you find out that they're working for this guy Grant, it's like, wait a minute, this is a Western. There's no chance you're the good guy. There's just no chance.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally the villain in every Western. What are you talking about? There's no chance you're the good guy. That's why when you find out later he's not the good guy, it's like, yeah, of course he's not.
You could almost wonder, is he like the grandfather of his own character from Trading Places?
Right.
So, and then while, you know, after, you know, she realizes they're not going to listen to her, she pushes Burt Lancaster out of the way, saying, your hands are filthy. Let me treat his wound. And Burt Lancaster's like, what's it to you whether he lives or die? And Lee Marvin points out, she'll keep him alive. Because as long as he's alive, he's going to slow us down, giving Raza a chance to catch up to him. to us, so don't worry, she's going to treat him well. Raza starts getting closer, but earlier in the movie, the professionals had set up an explosives around the canyon that would cut off a pass to give them extra time to get away. And just as they set off the fuse and the fuse starts running to the charges, Maria makes her chance to get away. She gets on a horse, starts riding hellbent for the canyon where it's about to blow and collapse the mountain down into the canyon. And they manage to get her and stop her just before she's killed by the explosion, giving them more time to get away from Raza.
And I thought that was a cool sequence where she's trying to, where the fuse is like outrunning her on the way out.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was
a very tense sequence. Because you're almost, you know, because at this point, you know, like, what's going to happen? Is she going to get away back to Raza? Are they going to drag her back across the border? Is she going to get killed in this explosion? So they're not making good, even with them collapsing the chasm behind the canyon behind them. Their horses are being run too ragged. The revolutionaries' horses are used to this treatment. They're used to the desert. They can make better time than the professionals are. In fact, at one point, Robert Ryan has to shoot Maria's horse because it's suffering and dying because of the heat. Lee Marvin realizes they're not going to make it unless somebody stays behind and holds off the others. So he says to Burt Lancaster, you take Maria and Woody Strode and Robert Ryan, and you get Maria back to the border. I'm going to stay here. This is a good place. One person can hold them off if they fire and evade long enough for you guys to get back there. And Burt Lancaster's like, nope, I'm going to stay behind and do it. You get them to, you complete the contract. And I think part of that is because Burt Lancaster isn't sure himself whether or not he'd let Maria go.
Right.
If Lee Marvin stayed behind.
That's the same impression that I get. Plus, I think he's kind of into it. It's like he's like Marvin, not, you know, they're all the professionals, right? But Marvin, and again, we're kind of just focusing on these two as the movie kind of does. And I'm not even sure where Woody Strode is at this point. But
well, he's the scout, so he's usually a few.
He's like, he's usually away.
And we don't even know if Woody Strode realizes what the situation going on is.
Right, because he wasn't there. He's just been out and around. So I feel like, you know, part of it with Marvin is he's trying to make sure everybody gets paid for the thing that they're doing, because that's what they're doing. And like, yeah, you know, Lancaster is not quite, I mean, he was doing it for the money too, but as much for the adventure, for everything else. It's like, yeah, you're right. He seems to be a bit more of a free spirit with it. So that's kind of the same impression that I had, is that he was staying behind because he wanted them to succeed. He wasn't necessarily sure if he wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I, again, it's really not clear whether Woody Strode knows what's fully going on, and right, whether he just believes they're still on a rescue mission.
Right. No, I mean, as far as we know, or at least as far as I can tell, yeah, like he's not necessarily kept in the dark, but no, he wasn't there for that conversation. So it's exactly, yeah, he's out scouting somewhere, making sure they're not like snuck up on. He probably has no idea.
Yeah, he's concentrating on his job.
Yeah.
So the others start heading towards the border, and Burt Lancaster makes his preparations to hold off Raza. And he's got about, I would say, 10 people. Raza's got about 10 people still riding with him at this point. We don't know whether this is because the professionals have killed off the rest, or he's just said, you know, it's only going to take 10 of us to get her back. You know, we don't need to bring everybody in on this rescue mission.
Yeah, he's got an operation to run.
Yes. So the finale of the movie is basically Burt Lancaster holding off the charge of these last few revolutionaries coming after him.
Yeah,
and he does a good job of whittling them down.
Yeah, not quite the last battle I was expecting.
And, you know, every time they think like, okay, he's over here, so run around this way and ambush him here. Well, Burt Lancaster pops up in another space and ambushes them. Then it gets down to where they're in earshot of each other and they start yelling at each other. And that's when Raza realizes the guy he's been fighting this whole time is his old comrade in arms, Burt Lancaster. And when Chiquita, who's part of this whole band, and this is where she really shines,
yep.
when he hears, she hears Burt Lancaster yell out, baby, her face lights up and she goes, baby.
Yeah.
She realizes her old lover's out there. But let's face it, they're still all willing to kill each other.
Yep.
Because as the situation gets down to Raza, Chiquita, and two of his soldiers, they get around and there's an exchange in gunfire where Burt Lancaster kills another one, but he takes an injury, and so does Raza. Raza gets shot in the leg, and they start just kind of again yelling out to each other, like, how bad are you hit? And, you know, where did we get you? And Lancaster yells out, right in the ass. How about you? And Raza answers, who? An inch or so higher.
Yeah.
And again, everybody's just like so friendly as they're trying to kill each other. Because he even calls out to Lancaster, like, I smell tobacco. Can you spare a cigar? And Lancaster's like, sure, come and get one.
Yeah.
And they all kind of giggle. And Raza yells out to his last soldier, what about you? Do you want a cigar? And he's like, nope, smoking's bad for the health. No, thank you.
Yes, they're all very matter-of-fact about their situation in a way that can only come from living that life as long as you have. Like, it just becomes no different than you or I might talk about our work at an office or something. You know, the copier's stuck again or something like that. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm hurt. I'm shot. That's just how this goes, I guess.
Yeah.
Just messing with each other.
So the three of them make another try on Lancaster, and Lancaster takes out the other soldier and manages to shoot Raza again. So now Raza's pretty shot up, and Chiquita's the only soldier he has left. And there's an exchange. Again, it's just another exchange between Lancaster and Chiquita, just kind of yelling out to each other as, you know, old boyfriend and girlfriend's like, wow, you haven't slowed down. And she's like, nope. And like, you never say no to anybody, do you? Like, nope. It's all just, you can't imagine how, like you said, they're just so
matter of fact. Yeah. Well, yeah, even Lancaster, like when he shot, he's just kind of like lounging on that rock, you know, like he's enjoying a sunny day.
And Chiquita, and they almost seem like you know,
happy to see each other, yeah. As much as they are ready to kill each other. Yeah.
Too bad we're going to kill each other.
Like, oh, I haven't seen you in ages. How you doing? How's every little thing? Bang, 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 bang. Yeah.
This is their life.
Yeah.
So Raza says, all right, the two of us are going to make one more charge, and I'm going to lead the charge. And Chiquita's like, no, I'm going to go first because he won't shoot me. So she leads the charge. She goes riding around, takes a few shots at Lancaster, and we find out now he's completely willing to shoot her.
Right. I mean, he's not stupid.
And he shoots her right off her horse. And as she lays there in the dust dying, we see Raza, you know, succumbing to his injuries, and he falls off his horse. Lancaster gets down to Chiquita, and he holds her in his arms, and you know they have this last moment together.
It's actually a very sweet moment in such a strange situation.
Yes, and you know she asks him for water, and he turns to grab a canteen.
Yeah.
And as he turns, she puts her gun right up against his head and pulls the trigger.
I just like how the gun comes up out of nowhere, and it's like it's done so well because it's like, you're half expecting it, but you're thinking, nah, and then there it is.
And without any hesitation, she pulls that trigger.
Yep.
Fortunately for Lancaster, the hammer falls on an empty chamber. And they have another little sweet moment as she dies in his arms. But there's no ambiguity. She was willing to blow his head right off with her dying breath. So he's holding her dead, cradling her dead body, and he looks over and sees Raza lying in the dirt, and we cut back to the other three escorting Maria across the line of Mexico back into the United States, where they're going to meet up with Grant and his posse. And Jake is the first one to, like, you know, Lee Marvin saying, you know, oh, okay, it's payday, boys. And Woody Strode's like, yeah, but it would be sweeter if Lancaster was here with us. So as they're waiting, and they see Grant coming and with his men, they see off in the distance a dust cloud approaching. They assume it's probably Raza and his forces, but when they look through the binoculars, they're very pleased to see it's Burt Lancaster riding up on them. And when Lancaster arrives and the dust settles, we see that he's got Raza, who is still alive, propped up on his horse. And Lee Marvin's like, what are you doing? What is this about? You know, and Burt Lancaster's like, you know, it's about them. This, none of this is really should be about us. It's about them.
He says something Grant, about, like, I figured out what makes a woman worth $100,000 or something.
$100,000, yes. She, of course, Maria goes running to Raza, and just as Grant arrives with his forces and sees what's going on, well, actually, at first, he's saying, oh, boys, you done it.
See you later. Here's your money. Go. Yeah, he's trying to get rid of them.
You know, yeah, if you guys, you know, go to the hotel, you know, whatever you need, drinks, everything's on me, you know, go celebrate. You accomplished your job. And then he sees Raz and is like, what's he doing here? And first, Lee Marvin doesn't really have anything to say. And Burt Lancaster is the one that kind of challenges him. And Grant turns to his men and says, points to Raz and says, kill him. And they all draw their guns and like, no. You haven't earned the right to kill him. And this is where G.W. Grant shows his true side.
Right.
This is where he gets mean and is like, you know, obviously treats Maria as his property. And, you know, at first you kind of got the idea that he really loved her. And, right. You know, maybe he kind of does, but he doesn't know how to say it.
He can't accept the fact she doesn't love him either way. And he's willing to kill over it.
I think he accepted the fact she don't love him.
Well, yeah, I guess, but he doesn't like the appearance of it.
You know,
like he can't look like he's accepting it. I guess, yeah. Ego or whatever. Yeah.
Whether or not she loves me, she can't love anybody else.
Right. She's my property. Yeah. Like I bought her more or less fair and square.
Finally, Lee Marvin kind of comes to his senses and says, "Yeah, you know what?" He grabs a buckboard and a horse. He puts the injured Raza onto the buckboard, gives Maria the reins, and has her ride them back to the two of them back to Mexico. And you know, it's clear that Ortega, you know, Grant's secondhand man, was in on the whole scheme, you know, with Maria and Raza as well. And he's beaming with smile, seeing, you know, a woman he saw grew up going to, you know, live the life she wants to lead. Grant calls Lee Marvin a bastard, and Lee Marvin responds, yes, for me, an accident of birth. For you, you're a self-made man.
Yeah, that's a good line.
And the four professionals get on their horses and ride off triumphant?
I guess. Except for a
no richer. And boy, did they kill a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Now, were you as surprised as I was, you know, the first time watching it, obviously, that they all survived, all four?
Yes.
I was convinced at least one was going to die.
Yes. But I was also kind of, you know, and it shows, like, it's much more representative of the time period the movie takes place in. Mm-hmm. That, like we said, they didn't just, you know, it took all that for Lee Marvin to kind of realize, no, I'm in the wrong here. I've been the kidnapper for the last half of this movie. You know, whether he, you know, was in that mindset of like, no, maybe he convinced himself he was doing the right thing.
I think
maybe
it's something he like saw, that.
Well, like we know his wife was tortured and murdered by, you know, the Mexican. Maybe he thought in a way he was saving his dead wife too. Maybe he put some of that on there.
Yeah.
You know, let me get her out of this life. Let me get her back to this rich guy who can give her a wonderful life free of everything. But he finally realized, no, that's not what she wants, and she needs to live the life she wants to live.
And you can feel it at the very end when he, you know, that he's turned, when he's starting to be a stickler to Grant, being like, nope, we're I forget exactly how he puts it, but he's like, you know, we're very, you know, more or less we're professionals. We want to make sure that she's handed over properly. Like, he wants to see the two of them together. He wants to see her reaction.
When Grant says, like, you know, we've got a contract, he says, you're right. We had a contract to rescue a woman from a nasty kidnapper.
And here she is. Yep.
Turns out that kidnapper is you.
Right.
Yeah, I think he was, you know, deluding himself the entire time. And again, Robert Ryan kind of realized that, but he was, you know, like, this isn't my business to say.
Right, he's just watching the horse.
Really unclear whether, you know, Woody Strode even knew the full extent of what was going on. And it was up to his buddy, Burt Lancaster, to kind of try to be his conscience and be like, you know, almost all through the movie, Burt Lancaster's trying to be his conscience. Because even at one point, he's like, you know, there's not too far from here, there's another cemetery.
Yep.
A cemetery, you know, where there's gold possibly buried. Let's ride after that. We won't have to fight anybody to get it. We'll just have to search for it. And again, Lee Marvin is focused on, no, I've taken this contract to go rescue a woman, and we're going to carry that out.
Do you know, did they ever consider sequels to this? Because it looks like it did pretty well. I mean, it was certainly well regarded. Still, you know, it got both reviews at the time and contemporarily.
It did very well at the box office, both in the United States and internationally. But you don't really see a lot of Western sequels, especially even at that time.
Really? Is that more of an Italian thing? And even then, like, inadvertently, because they just tack on the name to a movie.
Yeah, I mean, there have always been sequels. I mean, sequels go back at least as far as the 1930s and 40s with the Frankenstein.
No, I'm saying in terms of Westerns of the time, was that more of a, was that something done with, you know, with the Italian, like, spaghetti Westerns, or?
I don't know. It just, I don't know if sequel Westerns were ever really that popular, because there really isn't a lot of them.
They tended to be remade more than anything. Yeah?
Remade, or just, you know, there was enough stories out there that, you know, you didn't need to make a sequel.
Okay.
Or work something into a sequel. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it has to do with, you know, whenever you're doing a sequel that has this spectacular cast of stars, trying to arrange it so that they can all work together again, if they all want to work together again, and the amount of money it would probably take to pay them, you know, the law of diminishing returns was probably like, yeah, no, let's not bother. Especially at this point where Westerns were starting to be really kind of fall out of fashion. It was really the spaghetti Westerns coming over that were reigniting the Western fandom. But maybe if it happened in the earlier 60s or the 50s, maybe we would have seen a sequel. But again, it just wasn't something. I mean, even John Wayne didn't really do sequels. He did a couple, you know. There was the Rooster Cogburn, the sequel to True Grit, but True Grit won him an Oscar, so
sure,
you know, there was obvious reasons to try to do a sequel there.
And this,
the Magnificent this Seven one, had some sequels.
The Magnificent Seven had what, four?
Three, a TV show, and a remake.
Three, a TV show, and a remake. Okay, so for some reason I thought there was four original movies. You said before
there's four original movies, but there's three sequels.
Oh, gotcha. You're right. that math makes sense. You mentioned before, I believe this one, did it win three awards? Did it win the cinematography award? And
it was nominated. They didn't win any. Okay. I know there was an award. I forget what it was called, but it was basically it reached, you know, a number of ticket sales within a certain time. So it's kind of like, you know,
being certified,
like a record going, a record going goal.
Right. Gotcha.
Type of thing. Yeah. Which is still impressive.
Yeah.
You know, this movie was extremely popular, but yeah, sequelitis just wasn't kind of a thing. Because I would have been all over a sequel. Any reason to team these guys up again.
Right.
And send them out on an adventure. You know, they could have had them teaming up, you know, just for like a pre-World War II type of adventure. You know, of maybe heading back down south and hiring on with, you know, a Raza who's, you know, maybe even wheelchair-bound because of all his injuries received in this. And almost them like...
Well, the bullets
we're
in the
sorry we did this to you. What can we do to help?
The bullets in the leg and possibly back or wherever else he was hit. And then riding for miles in the desert on the way back to wherever he was. Couldn't have been great.
No.
If he survived, good on him.
But this is a fun... well acted action adventure western.
Yeah, it's a good gateway. It's a good gateway western if you want to kind of get into them or you know see something different or of the time. I think this is a good gateway choice. Requires no pre-knowledge or anything. You just sit and watch and enjoy.
And if you're into like you know the dialogue and the camaraderie of characters, if you like, you know like buddy movie, like buddy war movies. Or anything like that, you know.
They don't.
Four guys banded together to accomplish something who all have a mutual respect for each other that's developed.
It seems to me like the Ensemble movie really had its best time throughout this era. Like you still get them, but I don't know. There's something about the classic ones where I think they're just it works so much better.
No, you're right. Like the late 60s through the early 70s, we really were bombarded with these ensemble casts of big name stars working together. And you really get to see like how they hold up against each other.
Yep. Yeah. You don't really,
you know, now,
you
nowadays you get the one big star and that's all they're kind of willing to pay for. Maybe you get one or two others, but you know, you really get to see their, you know, acting about like look at Lee Marvin in The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah,
there were other stars in it, but Bronson wasn't a star yet. Nick Cassavetes kind of was. That's why he's high up on the cast. You know, Donald Southern wasn't anything yet either. It was kind of Lee Marvin, Clint Walker, and Nick Cassavetes that were kind of the known actors in that movie. You know, along with Ernest Borgnine and Robert Ryan, but they don't share a lot of scenes together. This you get, like, the relationship between these four men is something, you know, to enjoy all on its own.
Yeah.
The confrontations before you know, like you said, that confrontation they have with the three bandits that have captured Burt Lancaster. You know, that guy's great.
That's my favorite scene.
You know, the interaction between, you know, Chiquita, Raza, and Lancaster at the end of the movie when they're all trying to kill each other. It's great.
If Plex is accurate, because I couldn't tell from IMDb, but if Plex is accurate, I believe he is, they have him credited as revolutionary, and his name is Jose Chavez. I don't know if that's actually him, but the picture looks like him. But his
give him a shout out because
his little scene and his delivery of do I have to kill you to prove I like you is just brilliant.
And it would almost make me like no, let me put down my gun. Let's have some tequila together.
He's so good at being so that like that super nice but maliciousness. Like he nails it in that scene. It's kind of creepy, but at the same time, like almost trusting. I'd almost trust him. Like, oh, yeah, you know what? He doesn't seem so bad.
Now, this is, like you said, it's a good gateway Western because it's really, I mean, it is a Western because of the time period it takes place in, but it could just as easily be like, you know, modern day or World War II. It's really more of a, like I said, a commando movie where, you know, they're all specialists, they're all professionals, and they have this, you know, plan set up to carry out The Mission.
Yep.
Definitely want to check this one out. Got anything else to say about the movie in general?
No, other than I'm glad you suggested it. I'm glad to have finally seen it for, I think, perhaps the first time, but again, not quite sure, but may as well be. It was a fun one, and I look forward to, yeah, I look forward to putting this in rotation, seeing it again.
Yeah, excellent acting, excellent cinematography, excellent direction, excellent dialogue. This movie hits on all cylinders. All right, so recommendations?
There's a bunch of different ways you can go with it, I guess. I love a good ensemble cast of the time. So, you know, obviously you get your Magnificent Seven, which I imagine you might have considered anyway. Some of the other movies that we have done, you know, for example, Dirty Dozen, not technically a Western, but that's also not the point of these recommendations. I'd also consider movies like Uncommon Valor or, say, Extreme Prejudice.
Yeah. Those are some good ones. I would say a good companion to this movie would be The Wild Bunch.
Okay.
Because you could almost, this is a few years after, you know, but it's during the same revolution.
Right.
So you could, they're good companion pieces. And Big Jake.
Oh.
With John Wayne and two of his sons in another, you know, rescue mission across the border into Mexico. But instead of rescuing a woman, he's rescuing his kidnapped grandson.
Yep.
Played by his actual son, Ethan Wayne. And in fact, his other son, Patrick Wayne, plays his son, as well as Christopher Mitchum, son of Robert Mitchum, plays one of his other sons.
Oh, cool. Now, I know I have seen that with you.
Dog.
Exactly. Yes, that's the one I was going to say. Is that one? Yeah.
Even last season. One of the last seasons is in the movie.
Oh, really? You probably mentioned that at the time, but I had forgotten that.
Yeah. So those are the recommendations. Or do you want me to go first with our exploitive title for... our more exploitive title for this movie?
I can go first. I couldn't come up with what I usually do. What I've done the last few times, I couldn't come up with something that I really liked or just wasn't just repeating myself. So instead, I just went with a different way to sell this movie, and I have two. One of them is Blood Bandits and Babes in the Mexico Heat, right? And then the other one for perhaps the Italian market would be, for a few dollars more, you can hire Sartana, Ringo, Django, and Sabata. I've decided it's nice. A Sartana movie now. They can do it, so can I.
Well, why not?
But I got all four in there.
Well, there's four of them, so you might as well.
Exactly.
I've got Blood on the Desert Sands, The Kidnapping of Maria Grant.
Ooh. Oh, I would watch that TV movie.
All right. Well, now for the last thing is we connect this movie to my favorite movie, The Magnificent Seven, which shouldn't be too difficult because all six main cast members, Burt Lancaster, Lee Marvin, Robert Ryan, Woody Strode, Claudia Cardinale, and Jack Palance have appeared in movies with Charles Bronson.
Right, you are. So I'll go first. And it's going to be pretty obvious. Ralph Bellamy was in Rosemary's Baby with Charles Grodin, who was in Clifford. And that's the Martin Short one, not the Big Red Dog, who was in Three Amigos with Tony Plana, who played El Jefe. He was one of El Guapo's, El Guapo's like second in command or whatever. And he played one of the priests in the benediction segment of Nightmares. Leo Estevez was in Nightmares. He was also in Repo Man, which is getting a sequel, apparently, or a prequel, I'm not sure which, and reminds me, I have to watch that movie again, it's been a long time. Anyway, Repo Man also has Harry Dean Stanton, who is in How the West Was Won with Eli Wallach.
Okay. Well, just because I brought it up, I will quickly run down before I do mine. Mm-hmm. Robert Ryan and Lee Marvin were, of course, in The Dirty Dozen with Charles Bronson. Woody Strode and Claudia Cardinale were both in Once Upon a Time in the West with Charles Bronson. Jack Palance was in Shadow's Land with Charles Bronson. And Burt Lancaster was in Vera Cruz with Charles Bronson, which was his last movie under the name of Charles Buczynski. However, my Magnificent 7 Degrees is Jorge Martinez de Hoyos, which I'm hoping I pronounced properly, who played the Goat Keeper, was in the Magnificent Seven.
Oh, he was.
He's one of the lead villagers. He's actually one of the trio of... he plays Valerio, who is the leader of the trio that goes out and hires the Magnificent Seven. And he's got the scene with Steve McQueen and everybody. He's basically the liaison between the Seven and the village. He's the lead villager going up against Calvera.
You know, I thought he looked familiar, but I didn't think much of it because I've been watching a lot of these spaghetti westerns lately. So I figured, all right, he must have appeared in something I've seen. But as soon as you mentioned it, I'm like, oh my God, I know exactly who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. Want to remind folks that Todd and I are part of a new podcast. Only one episode out so far. A new episode should be out soon, but it's called Masked Faces and Secret Bases, all for just 75 cents. We're on that with it's Mick Jameson's podcast about comic books, and we're proud to be teaming up with him because another passion of mine is comic books, so I'm glad to have that outlet too.
Yeah, and I'm honored to be a part of it, trying to figure out where I fit.
Well, that's really what kind of helps us out is the less you know and the more questions you ask, it really helps us make sure we're telling we're explaining ourselves properly. So that really helps. I also want to remind you, you can follow us on X/Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, and Instagram, all at Movie Matt Sirois, one word, MovieMattSirois. And, you know, if you have any questions or recommendations or anything, you know, you can ask them on there. And we thank you, as always, for listening and hope to have you back next time.
Did you mention Letterboxd?
Oh, yeah, Letterboxd. I did not. Again, you can find us at Movie Matt Sirois on Letterboxd, but that's the best place to see what we're watching and reviewing. That's a great little outlet for movie fans. So, catch you next time, people.
Thank you, everyone.
Stay gold.